Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it's a beautiful weekend, and I can't think of a place I'd rather be than right here behind this very microphone, because I've got the extraordinary privilege of being able to share vital health information with you. And we invite you to participate. You can call us at 888-302-3684, 888-302-3684. Get you right into the doctor's office for the ability to pose a question about vitamins, supplements, nutrition, or health. We invite you to call us, 888-302-3684. And before we get to callers, here's an item that it's of critical importance, because it is yet another nail in the coffin of the low-fat diet hypothesis. You've heard this so many times. Replace saturated fat with, quote, healthy vegetable oils to reduce cholesterol and reduce your risk of cardiovascular disease. Well, that was the message of a study called the Minnesota Study that came out a long time ago, in 1989, and it suggested that, indeed, if you replace saturated fat with vegetable oil rich in linoleic acid, like corn oil, you could lower your cholesterol. And so the researchers reported that, and everybody was advised to drink a lot of corn oil and get rid of saturated fats. But there was a big problem with that. The results, the true results of that study, were suppressed until recently. And only now, significant portions of the original data have been recovered and analyzed. And what they found is that, indeed, you could somewhat lower cholesterol by getting rid of saturated fat in the diet, but it did not translate into improved outcomes in cardiovascular health. In fact, the outcomes were worse. So, according to Nina Teicholz, who's been a frequent guest here on our Intelligent Medicine podcast, you can find our podcast at drhoffman.com. They provide a lot of added content to what you hear on weekends. Nina Teicholz says, quote, Ivan France Jr., who's the principal investigator of that study, quote, sat on the results for 16 years and didn't publish because, he says, we were just so disappointed in the way that the results turned out. So he's kind of saying, well, okay, yeah, we lower cholesterol, but the part about it not translating to cardiovascular benefits was conveniently omitted because it didn't fit their preconceptions. So, yeah, finally, we now have conclusive evidence that replacing saturated fat with so-called healthy vegetable oils is a lot of hooey. Now, how many places still parrot that advice mindlessly? Well, here's an interesting statement from the American Heart Association. Now, they've done something good. They now recommend that 100 milligrams per deciliter replace 150 as the upper limit for optimal triglycerides. It used to be you could have triglycerides up to 150. They said you're fine. Well, we know that people with the triglycerides of 135 are not fine. They generally have correspondingly low HDL. They're generally insulin resistant, maybe pre-diabetic, possibly hypertensive, and at higher risk for fatty liver. So that's not optimal. The AHA now recommends that 100 be the upper limit for triglycerides. I recommend that 70 or 80 be the upper limits for triglycerides, but hey, that's progress. So the new statement includes specific recommendations for reducing sugar, fructose, and alcohol for those with elevated triglycerides, which is all good because we know that triglycerides come from refined carbohydrates. But check out their continued recommendations. This is from the statement. Diet and lifestyle changes that include substituting healthy fats for unhealthy saturated and trans fats. Okay, what are these healthy fats? Well, these healthy fats still include healthy vegetable oils. It's like a broken record. They can't get off the bandwagon about saturated fats. Now, we know, everybody now concludes, trans fats, those are really bad. I think there's universal agreement. But when it comes to this recommendation about unhealthy saturated fats, they're still hanging on with that. Saturated fats have absolutely no impact on triglycerides. In fact, a diet high in saturated fats and low in carbohydrates is ideal for reducing triglycerides. So, yeah, okay, some progress, finally acknowledging that there's some flaws in that old theory. But unfortunately, in this echo chamber of nutrition, these recommendations still get made. 888-302-3684 is our number. Let's talk to Alice in Trenton, New Jersey. How are you?
Fine, thank you, Dr. Hoffman. I was hoping you might be able to give me some tips to help me. I'm 87 years old, and I was just diagnosed with moderate emphysema. Mm-hmm. I was a smoker. I stopped in 1964.
Well, there you go. See, that actually shows that sometimes smoking is like a time bomb, and sometimes the damage that occurs from smoking can appear 30 or 40 years later. In your case, we're talking, 50 years later. So, there are plenty of people who get emphysema just from living in an urban environment or having chronic respiratory infections and allergies. So, what are some of the things that you can do? Well, number one, I think most of the scientific evidence around emphysema in relationship to diet, there's a real consensus that lots of omega-3 fatty acids slow the progression of emphysema. So, go to town on omega-3s. Take a lot of fish oil capsules. You can take 4 to 6 a day, and that should really have an impact on the progression of the emphysema. Also, take anti-inflammatory nutrients like curcumin. Curcumin is a wonderful anti-inflammatory. We know there's a big inflammatory component in emphysema, so curcumin would be a good way to reduce inflammation in your lungs. When it comes to the body's premier antioxidant, glutathione. Glutathione is very helpful at reducing the type of inflammation that you get in emphysema. And the major supplement source of glutathione, you can take glutathione supplements. I don't personally think they're that well absorbed, and they're kind of pricey. You should be taking some N-acetylcysteine or NAC. And, 2 or 3 a day should provide you with some building blocks for glutathione to fend off inflammation. I mean, I have some of my patients with emphysema inhaling glutathione. We give them a prescription. They put a little bit of glutathione in a nebulizer, and they inhale it every day, and that is actually very helpful. And finally, there's actually some very interesting new evidence on broccoli. There's a compound in broccoli that may ease COPD symptoms, and it's sulforaphane. Now, we know sulforaphane is something that's helpful for cancer prevention, but it's also a wonderful detoxifier and a wonderful antioxidant, and it's a wonderful anti-inflammatory. And so in a new study published in Science Translational Medicine, researchers at Johns Hopkins found that sulforaphane helps to neutralize free radicals in the body. And so consider eating broccoli, or you can take sulforaphane supplements. Broccomax is a supplement that concentrates sulforaphane, so you can take a capsule or two daily. And that helps the body detoxify and may help to reduce the continuous damage that occurs when you have a chronic inflammatory condition like that. So give those things a shot. And that should make a difference for you. Okay, Alice?
Thank you very much, Dr. Hoffman. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. All the best to you. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. 888-302-3684 is our number. And should you care to call us this hour, great. If not, you can email us your question to radio program, one word, at AOL.com, and we'll use your question as grist for the mill for our weekly Q&A with Layla session, wherein we answer listener questions. Check it out at DearHoffman.com. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This is Intelligent Medicine.
At Wakanaga of America, we have dedicated the past 44 years proudly producing Kyolic, the world's most scientifically researched, best-selling, and odorless aged garlic extract. We begin with 100% organically grown garlic from our farms in California for maximum purity. We age our garlic to perfection in a unique 20-month extraction process to eliminate odor and create beneficial compounds found only in Kyolic. Aged garlic extract has been researched in more than 750 published scientific studies at major universities such as Brown, Cornell, and UCLA. Studies have focused on cholesterol, high blood pressure, immune stimulation, and all major cardiovascular risk factors. This is the Kyolic difference. So when you're looking for a supplement for great cardiovascular support, reach for the number one best-selling and odorless aged garlic extract, Kyolic. Please visit our website at Kyolic.com. Kyolic aged garlic extract is available at fine health food stores everywhere.
If you're interested in managing your blood pressure without medication, I have some exciting news about a new effective non-drug treatment. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, here to tell you about the Zona Plus. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. It's so effective, it works for 9 in 10 people. The Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. At least 22 clinical studies confirm regular use can result in an average decrease in blood pressure of 10% or more in just 4 to 8 weeks. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, the company is offering you special savings of $50 in free shipping. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman to get your $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662 or tryzonanow.com. Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. 888-302-3684 is our number. And blood pressure, big problem in America. Virtually half of Americans over the age of 60 have some kind of blood pressure problem. And yeah, you can sometimes overcome blood pressure with diet and exercise. But for many patients, that leaves them short and they still have to take medication with all the consequent side effects and expenses. And so you got to do something about blood pressure because it can lead to strokes, it can lead to heart problems. You can't simply ignore it. So I am tremendously excited about a new natural medical innovation. I want to turn you on to it. It's Zona Plus, and it is the real deal, folks. It is a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. It's so effective that it works for 9 in 10 people. What it is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. And at least 22 clinical studies confirm that regular use of the Zona, you got to do it 5 days a week for a period of 4 to 8 weeks. 22 clinical studies confirm that regular use can result in an average decrease in blood pressure of 10% or more in 4 to 8 weeks. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, the company is offering you special savings of $50 and free shipping. So to find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman to get your $50 savings and free shipping. That's 866-669-9662 or tryzonanow.com. Let's talk now to David in Queens.
Hello, doctor. I want to ask you two questions about vitamin D3.
Yeah.
For many years, I had been taking 5,000 units a day, and then I saw a recommendation to increase it. And then for about 2 years, I was taking 10,000 units a day.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a blood test, and the blood test showed my vitamin D level is 35. I was shocked. Hmm. I was expecting
Interesting.
70.
Yeah.
And so I have two questions. The first question is, a doctor said that if I take more than 2,000 a day, that's bad for the liver or the kidneys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So that's the first question. Is that true?
Well, first of all, that is actually, you know, when I was in medical school, I guess it's near to 35 years ago, 40 years ago. That's what they taught us, that vitamin D was potentially very dangerous. It was essential, but you got to be very careful because too much vitamin D can be toxic to the liver, and it could be toxic to the kidney. And in particular, it could cause excess calcium accumulation, give you kidney stones. So kind of we went along with that for a really long time. We thought, okay, vitamin D is good for the bones and it wards off rickets, but it doesn't do much else. And then there was a vitamin D revolution. We became aware that vitamin D was important for fending off infections, and it was important for cardiovascular disease and for autoimmunity and for mood and, you know, for so many other aspects of health. And then we recognized that higher doses of vitamin D really weren't toxic. And, you know, reports of toxicity generally only begin to occur when we give, you know, maybe 8 or 10,000 a day over a long period of time. They're very rare still, but, you know, you occasionally people make a mistake or a product is improperly formulated and people overdose on vitamin D, but very rarely. Now, your problem, you know, you're going to ask, well, what in the heck's going on here? Why do I have to take 10,000 when most people can take, you know, anywhere from 2 to 5,000 and they do fine? And there are probably about four or five reasons that some people need more vitamin D. One is that vitamin D may not be properly absorbed, you know, just like many other vitamins. It just does, it goes in and then it comes out without being absorbed into the bloodstream. That's one problem. And certain medications can interfere with that. So another problem is that some people kind of use up their vitamin D. They literally consume it. They burn it up in an effort to perhaps fight inflammation or, you know, because they're sick. Because vitamin D, you know, very much like vitamin C, your requirements for it go up when you have any kind of health challenge. Another thing is there's some genetic things going on about your ability to carry it in the bloodstream. You know, studies show that some people have defects in their ability to attach it to the proper carrier molecules to get it to circulate. And so there's several ways you can go wrong. And I've discovered that you really have to monitor tests and dose people accordingly. And, you know, your vitamin D of 35 isn't terrible. It's just a little bit low in the range of you know, where it's okay. It's not a deficiency. But you may have to go a little higher. You may go, you know, 10, 15 on alteration just to get it above 40, which we consider optimal for you. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine. Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. 888-302-3684 is our number. And Flint, Michigan is a terrible tragedy where due to some harebrained cost-saving measures, they let lead-contaminated water devastate an entire community. And there's an editorial in the New England Journal of Medicine last month entitled Lead Contamination in Flint, an Abject Failure to Protect Public Health. And they note, do you know when the first law against lead contamination was passed in the United States? You may think, okay, maybe in the 60s they, you know, became aware of that. It was actually in 1723. In 1723, the first Industrial Hygiene Act prohibited the use of lead in a still used to make rum because, and I'm reading from the original language, the strong liquors and spirits that are distilled through leaden heads or pipes are judged on good grounds to be more unwholesome and hurtful. They recognized it, what, 300 years ago, and we still have these terrible tragedies. So this is just a horrible situation because these kids have been exposed, especially kids are vulnerable, because kids don't have as good detoxification systems. They absorb poisons more readily. And economically disadvantaged kids who are on poor diets, poor diet encourages the uptake of lead into particularly the brain. So in coming years, they say in this article, parents will undoubtedly wonder with anxiety and even guilt whether their children's every developmental stumble stems from this episode. And it's a social crime, really, what we've done. And this is not an isolated incident, because they're lead hotspots are cropping up all over the United States, and it should have been handled years ago. They outlawed leaded gasoline in the 60s, and they became aware that paint was a problem in deteriorating housing stock. Scientists have linked chronic lead exposure to lowered IQ, shortened attention spans, antisocial behavior, having less gray matter, and chronic exposure can kill nerve cells and make it hard for new ones to survive and communicate. So, and this may be a time bomb, because the initial effects may not be seen until later in life and may contribute to a higher risk of dementia or Alzheimer's disease. So, one expert quoted in an article here, if people look closely, they'll find that many of these lead-exposed children are going to have mental issues. And there's no cure for lead poisoning. I take issue with that, because for the past 30 years or so, I've been engaged in chelation therapy at the Hoffman Center. We've chelated, you know, scores and scores of patients and dropped their lead levels down substantially. And what I think is called for is a national effort to identify kids who've been exposed to lead and give them appropriate chelation therapy. The technology is there. The drug is not expensive. It's out of patent now, so it's really not, you know, terribly, terribly pricey. And this would be very important in terms of preventing long-term problems associated with high levels of lead in the body. And, you know, I really think there should be a national initiative to treat these kids with appropriate chelation therapy. And it's not a bad idea for adults to get screened for lead toxicity, because that may lead to heart problems, to brain problems. The recent TACT study showed that if you get the lead out, the cadmium out of coronary vessels, it really reduces the risk of subsequent heart attacks in people who've had heart attacks previously. So it boggles the mind what we've allowed to happen in this country. And we need to get on the stick, because this is going to cost our country big bucks in terms of medical costs and lost productivity, and also, you know, crime statistics, literally, because delinquency and criminal behavior has been linked to high levels of lead. So we need to make this a national priority. None of the political candidates are talking about this, and that is truly a shame in this election year. All right, let's see what our callers have on their minds. Let's talk to Jill. Welcome. How are you doing?
Hi.
Hi, how are you? Jill's out there in Appleton, Wisconsin. We're getting a lot of calls from Wisconsin this weekend.
All right. Okay, well, my question real quick is, a relative has just been diagnosed with, and I'll probably kill the pronunciation, but myelofibrosis, which is a form of leukemia.
Yeah, it's actually a step short of leukemia. It is literally damage to the marrow, which is
right.
like a pre-leukemia. It's, you know, it can morph into leukemia, but it's yeah. So anyway,
okay, great. Well, and the doctor wants him to start taking a drug, I guess it's called Hydrea, to decrease the white blood cells.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he is going to be starting that.
Right.
He does have an enlarged spleen.
By the way, to share with you, that's actually one of the oldest drugs in the world. Hydrea is the basis of it. It's actually, there was an ancient practice where people would drink urine for medical problems, and that's kind of a harebrained idea. But actually, you know, a broken clock is right two times daily, and for this condition, I mean, it's not literally urine, and the urea in that medication is not synthesized from concentrated pee. It's, you know, made in a laboratory, and so it's pure. But literally, that can suppress the proliferation of the blood cells that are associated with this myelofibrosis condition. And it It does so in a way that's pretty non-toxic. The side effects are kind of minimal. And so, yeah, that's a good sort of mild way to start the therapy.
Okay. Then what would you suggest nutritionally-wise, supplement-wise, to help with this condition?
Yeah, I don't think that there's a magic supplement like take, vitamin X and that cures myelofibrosis. But the way it works is that when you see a patient with these types of conditions, you do a complete nutritional analysis, you clean up the diet, you provide the supplements that the patient is lacking, and you use anti-inflammatory and immune-supporting supplements. And you can help that condition. By the way, you know, vitamin D, generally very helpful in myelofibrosis. There's some other studies that show that anti-inflammatories like curcumin or things like resveratrol can play a role in that. Possibly, you know, something that I mentioned in COPD before, which is sulforaphane from broccoli. You can get some of these things by, you know, lots of concentrated fruits and vegetables in your diet. You know, that's one way to get it, but you can also take supplements that have standardized amounts of things like EGCG. For you could drink green tea, but EGCG concentrates the amount of EGCG in 6 or 7 cups of green tea. So these are some of the things that we might utilize in a patient with that. And, you know, for patients who have cancer, precancer, high doses of vitamin C are beneficial. Intravenous vitamin C has been proven helpful in many cancerous conditions. So, you know, those are some of the things that we might undertake. And, you know, you're out there in Wisconsin, you might consult a nutritionally oriented practitioner out by you to get targeted therapy for your relative. Okay?
All right. Great. You've been very helpful. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much. And thanks to all the folks in Wisconsin who are listening to our program this weekend. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. 888-302-3684 is our number. When we return, we'll take more of your phone calls, we'll talk about estrogen. Is it safe for women after menopause? This is Intelligent Medicine.
Staying healthy and building immunity begins in your gut, where an amazing 70% of your immune cells reside. So keeping your digestive tract healthy is imperative for ideal health. I'm Dr. Fred Pescatore, author and science advisor for Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics. And there's no better way to improve your digestive health than taking a high-quality probiotic. I recommend taking Dr. O'Hara's every day to rev up the immune system because it has carefully selected strains of beneficial bacteria that work synergistically to maximize health and improve immunity. His exclusive formula delivers live, beneficial bacteria that are easily absorbed and provides optimal digestive support, boosts immunity, and increases energy through better absorption of nutrients. Backed by over 25 years of scientific research, I believe that Dr. O'Hara's probiotic is the most powerful and effective probiotic available. Discover the Dr. O'Hara difference.
Dr. O'Hara's probiotics are available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide.
At Nordic Naturals, we know that a commitment to deliver the world's safest, most effective omega oils requires an exceptional process. That's why we manage every step of production, from boat to bottle. That includes sustainably sourcing wild-caught fish from well-managed fisheries. It means using state-of-the-art equipment and technology at our manufacturing plant in Arctic Norway. Nordic Naturals bottles and encapsulates our omega-3s at our own facility and carefully ships products from our eco-friendly headquarters in California. The result? Nordic Naturals products have received more than 40 awards for taste, innovation, and product excellence. You can trust the quality of Nordic Naturals products and know you're getting all the health benefits omega-3 fish oils offer. Nordic Naturals' high-quality, great-tasting omega-3s make staying healthy easier for you and your family. When choosing an omega-3 fish oil product, choose the number one fish oil in the U.S. Choose Nordic Naturals. Available at natural product retailers or online at nordicnaturals.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. The Women's Health Initiative study on estrogen for postmenopausal women resulted in a big mess because, this happened way back in the early 2000s. And the results of the study suggested that women who took estrogen were at higher risk for cardiovascular disease, resulting in a whole generation of women precipitously getting off estrogen, and immediately the temperature of the country went up a few degrees because these women's hot flashes came back with a vengeance. They were afraid to take estrogen because they thought it would damage their heart. That study was reanalyzed. It wasn't reperformed. They just reanalyzed the data. And what they found was they made a mistake because the average age of women in that study was 66. And the suggestion is that for some of these women, they already had heart disease. They were older. And starting or using estrogen at an older age may be associated with somewhat higher risk, primarily because estrogen has a blood thickening effect. By the way, the type of estrogen used in the study was synthetic, so that's part of the problem. For women younger than that age, for women in their 50s, starting on estrogen was protective. So here's another big study. New England Journal of Medicine just came out, and in this case, they used a natural estrogen, estradiol, not a synthetic estrogen. And what they found was, once again, reassuring that estrogen protects the heart. Oral estrogen therapy was associated with less progression of atherosclerosis than placebo, but you had to start the therapy within 6 years after menopause, because if you started it 10 or more years after menopause, it was not helpful. So suggestion that, au contraire, it is actually preventive. It helps to reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease. Similar results were seen with testosterone in men recently. Testosterone was under the gun because it was thought to increase the risk of heart attacks or strokes. No, according to a recent study, testosterone replacement therapy helps men's hearts. So hormone replacement therapy, from the standpoint of the heart, is rejuvenating. All right, let's take some calls. Let's talk to Nancy, who was out there in Iowa. How you doing, Nancy?
Oh, pretty good. And you?
Very well, thanks.
My husband has atrial fibrillation, AFib, and he's been taking Sotalol, but the doctor was not able to get his heart back into rhythm, so he said the Sotalol was not working. And the only thing that he could suggest was this amiodarone.
Amiodarone, yeah.
He says it has terrible side effects.
It does.
And I was wondering if you could suggest anything nutritionally or supplemental.
Right. Okay, so, you know, what I would, if your husband was coming to see me as a patient, and you're out there in Iowa, so that's a little bit problematic, you know, I would do a complete evaluation of him and find out, you know, what it is that may be promoting a rapid heart rate and a poor response to the medication. And, you know, most commonly, when you respond poorly or inadequately to a medication, it might be due to overweight. You know, that's a real potential problem. What's your husband's height and weight?
He's about 5'10 or 11, but he has lost like about 80 pounds in the last 2 or 3 years.
Oh, good.
So
okay.
He's down to, I think, 215.
Okay. Well, then he's, you know, that's precisely my height, and I got to tell you, I'm about 160 and change.
So he has
a little bit of a way to go, but look. Kudos to him. It's really hard to do that. And I guess he kind of had a little bit of an epiphany when he developed these problems. So it gives more strain on the heart when you're carrying extra weight, no question.
Right.
So, you know, he needs to continue in his efforts to optimize his weight. That's number one. Number two, we really need to assess his magnesium status, because magnesium is probably the best anti-arrhythmic agent out there. Really slows heart rate when used appropriately. And the type of magnesium that works best for atrial fibrillation, it's not going to normalize his rate in many cases and make him not have atrial fibrillation. That's not the goal. The goal is to just slow his rate, maybe enough to allow the Sotalol to do its job so he doesn't need to go on amiodarone, which has nasty side effects.
Yeah.
So it's magnesium taurate, and you might start with one capsule twice daily. And you
magnesium.
Can work up to as many, taurate, T-A-U-R-A-T-E. Both magnesium and taurine have regulatory effects on heart rate, so it's a good combo. And you go 2, 4, 6 capsules per day. And, the limiting factor in some people is loose bowel movements, because magnesium has a bit of a laxative effect, but magnesium taurate doesn't do that very much, and it should be okay. And the other thing to consider, CoQ10, coenzyme Q10 is a heart-supportive nutrient. That can be beneficial. And, you know, is he taking a statin? Presumably, right?
No, he will not take statin because he's read too much about it. But he is taking warfarin to thin his blood, and Nexium and
See, that's the problem right there. Thank you for sharing, because, you know, sometimes you have a little longer conversation, we find out what's going on. You know, Nexium is a medication that's used very commonly for stomach problems and GERD and reflux. And, you know, they put you on Nexium and they say, hey, you can stay on it for a lifetime. But lately they've recognized a pretty serious problem associated with Nexium, which is that it invariably causes magnesium deficiency. In fact, if you read the package insert on drugs like that, the PPIs, Nexium, Prilosec, Prevacid, and that ilk, these medications all dramatically curtail your absorption of magnesium. So my hunch is correct. I'm virtually certain that he's magnesium deficient, and he needs to take more magnesium to slow his heart rate. Part of the reason his heart rate is racing is due to inadequate magnesium. That's a common problem associated with magnesium deficiency. So, you know, that's the ticket. See if we can get that into him. See if, you know, by dint of weight loss and better diet, we can wean him off the PPIs. I know that's hard. That's a subject for another, you know, entire broadcast. How do you get people off of those medications? Because they're darn hard to kick. You get really hooked on them. That's, I think, you know, those are some suggestions that I think might help. All right?
I guess I should have said he's taken carvedilol and eplerone.
Mm-hmm. Well, he sounds like a heavy medicalized guy. It's a little more complex than one quick conversation can elucidate. But, you know, at least I think I set you on the right track with something that can't go wrong. Try some of those suggestions, and it might help.
Okay. Really appreciate this.
My pleasure. Thanks for listening.
We don't want to take that other stuff.
Yeah, okay. No, it shouldn't upset those other things. The things I suggested are perfectly compatible with his meds. Thanks for listening out there in Iowa. And this item comes to us from George Washington University. People who reported consuming more fast food were exposed to higher levels of potentially harmful chemicals known as phthalates. Phthalates are commonly found in plastics, but researchers at the Milken Institute School of Public Health at GWU said that people who ate the most fast food had phthalate levels that were as much as 40% higher. Phthalates belong to a class of food chemicals used to make food packaging materials, they find their way into fast food. The research suggests that these chemicals can leach out of plastic food packaging and contaminate highly processed foods. People in the study with the highest consumption of fast food had 24% higher levels of the breakdown product of a certain phthalate called DEHP in their urine samples, and those same fast food lovers had nearly 40% higher levels of DINP. That's another phthalate that is potentially hazardous. What can phthalates cause? Well, you know, among other things, phthalates have been associated with a higher risk of cancer. In addition, the researchers looked for exposure to BPA, and BPA is another potentially hazardous ingredient that is associated with food packaging. So, hey, you know, when you're looking to a healthy diet, think fresh foods that are not highly processed and packaged, because they're less likely to contain all these contaminants. If you eat junk food, your body is going to turn into a lot of junk. All right, in a concluding minute or so, I'd like to share with you that we've done some very exciting podcasts. Did a recent podcast on the subject of Lyme disease, and we investigated whether prolonged antibiotic use has benefit for persistent symptoms of Lyme disease. A lot of patients with Lyme disease don't recover. Are long-term antibiotics beneficial? You'll get the answers by checking out our podcast at drhoffman.com with Dr. Brian Fallon, and a recent great podcast on the subject of allergies with Dr. Leo Galland. He's got a new book, The Allergy Solution. Check it out. Lots of great content at drhoffman.com. This show is just the tip of the iceberg of the intelligent medicine phenomenon. Have a great weekend.